That's when it starts. Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of Bethlehem City Council for Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019, 7 p.m. here in Town Hall. We'd all please rise for the invocation by Reverend Dr. Pamela Payne of Trinity Episcopal Church, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please join me in prayer. Holy and loving God, you created all that is or will ever be. Bless those who hold office on this council that they may do their work in a spirit of wisdom, kindness, and justice. Grant them discernment in difficult decisions and joy in work well done. Help them to use their authority to serve faithfully and to seek the welfare of this city. We ask this in your own holy name. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend Payne. The clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Negron.
Present.
Mr. Waldron. I'm sorry, Mr. Reynolds.
Present.
Dr. Manwer.
Present.
Mr. Waldron.
Present. Prior to consideration of the regular agenda items this evening, City Council will conduct two simultaneous public hearings. Public hearing number one is the public hearing to review and accept public comment on the proposed use of funds to be received under the 2019 Local Share Account Northampton and Lehigh Counties Grant in the amount of $65,295.67. And public hearing number two will be to review and accept public comment on the proposed use of funds to be received under the 2019 Local Share Account Northampton and Lehigh Counties Grant in the amount of $108,737.64. Public hearings are conducted as follows. I will recognize Police Chief Mark DeLuzio to make the presentation on both items. Members of the council will have the opportunity to make comments and ask questions, and the public will be recognized for comment if they wish to do so. The public hearing is called to order. I will recognize Police Chief DeLuzio to make his presentation for both public hearing items.
Good evening. Let's start with the first one. The first grant application is for a Faro Focus S70 3D scanner. It will be used for various law enforcement functions. It recreates an identical 3D image of crime scene, accident scenes, any major event, building. Gives us the ability to document major accident scenes, crime scenes, fire scenes. It's supported by the Northampton County District Attorney's Office, and the use of the scanner is acceptable in both state and federal court. It also can be used in traffic safety and analyzing roads. It's lightweight, able to be moved throughout a scene. It will be utilized by certain trained police personnel in our forensic service unit, and it eliminates the chance of screen contamination or mismeasurements or misdocumentation or mixture of different type of measurements and gives us the ability to quickly and accurately document the scenes. One trained officer is needed to operate it, as the way we do it now, it takes several detectives to document a fatal accident scene or some type of major fire scene or some type of major scene in the city. It will take one officer utilizing this device and a laser system with it, and the average scene is about 5 hours. With the use of this machine, it will cut our time almost in half. It's a 3D laser scanner. It will be an asset to the city. You can also use it for event planning of major events and festivals in it. You can use it basically to do a 3D image of any major structure, major event, or any type of scene where measurements and any type of documentation is needed. It can be also used in gas leak, water line breaks, and sinkholes in any type of natural disaster. The second grant we proposed for 10 portable scales for commercial vehicle weights and inspections, a 3D interface box, and a 2020 Ford F-250 pickup truck to assist in traffic enforcement. The reason for the pickup truck is to haul the scales around. Currently, under Pennsylvania state law, if you pull over a commercial vehicle, and we have three officers that do commercial vehicle inspection throughout the city, and if you pull over a commercial vehicle, you have to take it to a certified weight scale. By law, the scale has to be within 2 miles of your traffic stop. Well, our scale is in the industrial park, and that limits us to certain areas of the city. Otherwise, it's outside the scale, and the measurements cannot be used in court. This gives us the ability, these portable scales, to go anywhere in the city, pull over any type of commercial vehicle that we believe is overweight. Overweight commercial vehicles include buses, include dump trucks, tractor trailers. The things that people complain about causing potholes, one of them is overweight commercial vehicles. They also damage roadways. This is also endorsed by our streets department, Mike Alcoll, who gave us a letter also of endorsement. It could be used to combat also the weight damages caused to bridges in the city, and it's one way to improve traffic safety, and it's a proactive step to maintain our highways and roadways and bridges in the city. We currently have officers that do it now, but we don't have all the equipment that is needed. This grant is to purchase the necessary equipment so we can get back up to par and get back in line doing these a lot more than we do now. Those are the two, that's the two information on both grants.
Thank you, Chief. On the first item, which is the 3D scanner, will there be any additional costs for training, software, or maintenance in the future?
No, because the software and the training is incorporated into the purchase price of the scanner. Reference to a maintenance agreement. Comes with a 3-year standard warranty and through calibration and certification. Repair, parts, labor. So it's good for 3 years. After that, that piece we have to pick up as a line item under contracts. And you're looking at a 3-year maintenance agreement of almost the lowest price items here, so probably around $3,000.
Understood. And on the second item, the scales and truck close spotting, I know some of those fines can be pretty hefty when it comes to issuing fines to drivers who are violating weight limits on bridges to thousands of dollars.
Yeah, definitely. Depends on how overweight they are and what the how many axles on the truck. There's never a traffic accident. As you know, most of my career was a detective. But somebody's fines go $30,000-$40,000
right
per truck.
And just the number of 10 scales kind of jumps out. What is the purpose of needing that many? Are they utilized at the same time, or what is the system?
Yes, they're utilized at the same time. If you look at the average tractor that pulls a trailer, you have basically 8 wheels in the back and 2 in the front.
Understood. So each
and if you take the trailer off of it, you still have 8 in the back. Stand. So
this is one full set, essentially.
Yes.
Understood. Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments, Mr. Cologne?
Thank you. Just to real quick, Chief, for the laser right now, is this commonly being used by other local departments, or is this something that we're, are we behind the game, ahead of the game, with something like this?
We would be actually catching up to the game. It's used by, I think the state police have one. Throughout the state, they use it. In Northampton County, the coroner's office has one, but it's obsolete. It's not even called the Faro or some other system. When we had the Puerto Rican club shooting and homicide there, we actually had to bring somebody in from Texas to do this for us. It cost us $15,000 just for the analysis and the 3D sketch for trial.
Okay.
So this actually puts us in front of the eight ball in the area.
Thank you. And then outside of the police department, I take it members of the fire department, public works will be trained in its use too. You said as other...
Yeah, the police technicians would operate it. They could use it on a sinkhole, any type of natural disaster in the city, any type of fire scene. We have a detective who's an arson detective. He's assigned with the fire department on any major fire. So you already have that connection of police and fire working together for years.
Understood.
So it could be available even to, if you want to go through every high school, it can chart out a high school of all the rooms. You just take it from room to room and it will put the whole picture together.
And then for the second one with the scales on the truck, that 108,000 plus, that'll cover the cost of the 10 scales plus the truck?
Yes.
In their entirety?
10 scales that are needed come in about $7,000. The interface is about $1,200, and the price of the truck, the 10 scales are $6,100 each. So you're looking at $60,000 there, and the price of the pickup truck and a laptop interface. So that comes up to $108,000.
Thank you, Chief.
Dr. Benmore?
You touched on something I was actually going to ask you about with this 3D scanner, which is it might be something you would need to coordinate with the school systems, but it would seem to be possibly wise to be proactive about this and scan our schools and have those images already embedded for anticipation of any other, I'm thinking of Parkland and anything else that might happen, God forbid, if we already had those images pre-scanned and available for the police to use whenever there was a crisis, it might be helpful. Are any plans like that in the works?
Yes, and you're 100% correct on that. Presently, right now, we have large books with blueprints and plans of every school. What this will do is this will give us the ability of just exactly what you said, go into a school and do a scan of that building, a 3D scan. Hallways, rooms, closets, lockers. So if you do, God forbid, have an incident somewhere in the city and somebody says it's in this area of Northeast, they can bring up that area of Northeast and they'll know exactly where they're talking about. Know where to send the officers to hopefully stop the person, whoever it is at that point. But that is part of the game plan here with it.
Okay.
You could use this. You could use it actually at a sinkhole, any type of major thing you want to document. Music Fest. You could take the overlay of Music Fest in the city. We could do a 3D with the buildings, advertising people, everything,
okay,
and lay it out.
Thank you. And then my second question, I understand that the scales will be used for detecting overweight vehicles. Would this help at all in terms of we hear a lot of citizen concerns about trucks being on inappropriate places, like there was a truck crash on Elizabeth Avenue where perhaps that truck shouldn't have been. Will this at all help in detecting whether or not those trucks should be there, or is that done by a different mechanism?
It can, because there will be officers out there doing work and traffic enforcement on trucks a lot more.
Okay.
Right now, we only have so many. We hope to get an additional. We have two trained right now in a traffic unit. I hope to bring about another two or three. I want a team of six traffickers trained in truck and bus enforcement. Okay, bus enforcement because of the amount of buses coming in and out of Bethlehem. They don't even register in Pennsylvania with mechanical problems. And that's been a joint thing we've been addressing with the state police from 78 to certain areas in the city. But that is the game plan, to stop some of the damage to the roads in the city from tractor trailers where they shouldn't be.
Thank you, Chief.
Chief, I just wanted to add to that. What Dr. Van Moore said, I think the problem with like Elizabeth Avenue, and some people are claiming it's a height violation. So what do you use as far as a mechanism for height violations to determine if it's a violation of the truck or enforce it? Because what happened was, I think Elizabeth Avenue, the trucks were too high and they brought trees down and damaged the property.
Trees and wires down. That right now is just part of our regular commercial vehicle enforcement program. If we catch them, we have to cite them, and we do cite them for it. There's certain heights on trucks. I don't know the exact heights you need on 18-wheelers, on the smaller trucks, on the smaller tractor trailers. But if they are over it and there's a violation, our traffic guys do cite them.
One more question, Chief. Do these grants require matching funds?
No, they don't. I'm looking right here on it. No matching funds on either one of them.
Thank you. I believe that's all. I will recognize the public for comments, which is an opportunity to make comments directed towards council. If anyone would like to make comment on either public hearing one or two. Seeing none, the resolutions will both be placed on tonight's agenda items as 10A and 10B. The public hearing is adjourned. Seeking approval of the minutes for November 6, 2019. Any comments? Seeing none, the minutes stand approved. Moving on to public comment on any subject not being voted on this evening. We have several names signed up previously. We'll look through those and then open it up to anyone else who'd like to make comment on any subject not being voted on this evening. First on the list is Robert
Billheimer.
Billheimer, thank you. Pardon me.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of council, Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Robert Billheimer, and I'm general manager of the Industrial Archives and Library, a private operating foundation based here in Bethlehem. It's my pleasure to be here tonight to see so many familiar faces and to present my Bethlehem moment. I take you back almost exactly 115 years ago. It's a chilly day in early January 1905. A train from New York City pulling a private rail car, the Loretto, slowly pulls into Union Station in South Bethlehem. And yes, it's the borough of South Bethlehem, for Bethlehem is not yet a unified city. In time, a man on that train would do much to change that, but that's not why he had come to town. As the train comes to a stop, out of the Loretto steps Charles M. Schwab, his reputation preceding him. He had been president of Carnegie Steel Company at just age 35, and the former first president of this nation's first billion-dollar corporation, sounds funny, United States Steel Corporation. He was a titan of industry, one of America's most distinguished citizens, and one of the wealthiest. Schwab had had a recent falling out with J.P. Morgan, Judge Albert Gary, and the board at U.S. Steel, and he had come to town to take the reins of a new entity which he had just founded the month before, the Bethlehem Steel Corporation, the key asset of which was the Bethlehem Steel Company and a single steel plant in Bethlehem, South Bethlehem, that is. Call it a bit of Schwab bravado, one-upmanship, or just Schwab's typical desire to do something else yet, as he liked to say, Schwab was bound and determined to go out and build a bigger and better U.S. Steel, and Bethlehem was his vehicle. He was very much a man on a mission, and he got started right away. Concerned that Bethlehem Steel's fortunes were too closely tied to military contracts, as Bethlehem had enjoyed great success as the birthplace of the American defense industry in the late 19th century, Schwab was looking for ways to diversify Bethlehem's commercial, non-military product line, and he found his answer overseas. Early in 1905, Schwab secured the rights to the grain mill process, a revolutionary but unproven process, developed by Englishman Henry Gray for the continuously rolling of a wide flange beam or structural shape. People in the steel industry said, "Charlie, you're crazy, that'll never work." Well, Schwab, ever ready for the challenge, believed otherwise and literally bet the company on it. He said at the time, "Boys, if we're gonna go bust, we're gonna go bust big." Well, it did work. And in 1908, the age of the skyscraper came into its own right here in Bethlehem. Interestingly, also in the crowd that day to welcome Schwab to Bethlehem was a young engineer and rising star at Bethlehem Steel, Eugene Gifford Grace. An 1899 graduate of Lehigh University, Grace joined Bethlehem Steel that year as a crane operator, making $1.80 a day. That's a day, not an hour. Grace's abilities quickly caught Schwab's eye and the young Charlie Schwab, and just like at the young Charlie Schwab at Carnegie Steel, Eugene Grace began a meteoric rise at Bethlehem Steel, becoming his president in 1916, where he effectively ran the corporation for the next 41 years. Schwab would slowly recede from day-to-day management of the company and would die in 1939, and Grace would become chairman in 45. But Schwab and Grace, two of this country's greatest industrialists, would together build one of the most remarkable and significant industrial organizations of the 20th century, taking a single plant, money-losing steel company, and building it into the second largest steelmaker in the country and the largest shipbuilder in the world. Dubbed the arsenal of democracy and arguably America's most important defense contractor through both world wars, Bethlehem's industrial output was staggering. Bethlehem built nearly 3,000 ships during that period, including 1,121 in World War II alone. In what was the largest and most diverse shipbuilding campaign in world history. Mr. Grace pledged that Bethlehem would build a ship a day by the end of the war, and he delivered with an amazing 380 in 1943. Bethlehem shipyards also repaired or converted an astounding 30,000 other ships during World War II. It was quite a record, but that's only part of the story. For not only did Bethlehem Steel play a pivotal role in defending this country, but also helped build the very landscape of our modern world and the infrastructure to transport its citizens. Out of Bethlehem Mills came such landmark structures as the Golden Gate Bridge, the George Washington Bridge, the Chrysler Building, the U.S. Supreme Court Building, the locks of the Panama Canal, and many, many more. Mr. Schwab and Bethlehem Steel also played a key role right here at home, with Schwab's instrumental role in merging the two boroughs into our modern city of Bethlehem in 1917, and his leadership in physically linking the two sides of the river via the Hill to Hill Bridge. And you don't have to look any further than Bethlehem's magnificent water system to see one of the many, many large and small ways that the company touched our community. Bethlehem was not just another steel company under founder Charles Schwab's tutelage. Bethlehem Steel was a paragon of American industry that helped touch society and shape the world, our country, and our community in many, many diverse ways. And it all started that day when Mr. Schwab came to Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bellheimer.
Next on our list is Lynn Rothman.
Good evening. Lynn Rothman, 870 Wofford Lane. And I'm here tonight on behalf of my fellow EAC members, Elizabeth Barron, Elizabeth Sachansky, Brian Hiller, Brian Nickus, and Mike Topping. And in accordance with our bylaws, each year we submit a report of our activities to the city. And I'll summarize our report to keep to 5 minutes, I hope. Our accomplishments for 2019 include the following. Proposed an ordinance banning single-use plastic bags. Recommended rules for rentals at park pavilions to eliminate glitter, confetti, and balloons from entering waterways. Implemented thanks to then-director of recreation, Jane Persa. Reviewed the concept plan for the Martin Tower development and sent recommendations regarding parking, green space, buffer areas, trees, and stormwater management. Sent a letter on behalf of Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife regarding the proposed sale of city-owned properties. Proposed an ordinance requiring new or retrofitted buildings over a certain size to obtain a solar assessment and, dependent upon the assessment, install solar panels. Submitted a cost analysis of electric vehicles versus gasoline vehicles for municipal operations to the Department of Public Works. Sent a letter to the Bethlehem Parking Authority concerning proposed and existing parking garages, including recommendations for sustainable design and incorporation of solar panels. Reviewed the city's request for proposal, or RFP, for firms to write a climate action plan, and subsequently reviewed the proposals from consulting firms and sent recommendations to the city. In conjunction with the Bethlehem Area School District, organized a contest for students to create designs for reusable bags. By invitation, spoke at Bethlehem Township Commissioners meeting to explain the role and potential benefits of an EAC. Made a presentation to Moravian Church's Care for Creation Committee about our EAC, plastics, and spotted lanternflies. Made a presentation to a local Girl Scout troop about recycling and spotted lanternflies. Our Community Energy Efficiency Committee participated in a back-to-school event at the Hispanic Center, distributing flyers in English and Spanish regarding energy efficiency in homes. An EAC member was a panelist at the YWCA Great Decisions Lecture Series preview lecture titled Climate Change, Lehigh Valley Strategies for Today and Tomorrow. An EAC member was the guest speaker at the Bethlehem Library program titled Plastic Waste and Its Impact on Our Community. We toured the recycling center and composting facilities with Michael Halberforster, the director of recycling. Speakers at EAC meetings this year included the Sierra Club, Northampton County Councilwoman Tara Zerinsky, Lehigh University graduate students, representative of Liberty High School's Conservation Club, City of Bethlehem Director of Recycling Michael Halberforster, City of Bethlehem Forester David Schaefer, Chair of the Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce's Energy and Environment Committee Michael Gibson, the City of Bethlehem Department of Public Works, and the Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife. Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife is a standing committee of the EAC, and a report of their accomplishments in 2019 will follow my report. During the course of the year, the EAC continued strengthening relationships with city departments, attended and spoke at city council meetings, continued our Facebook page with increasing numbers of followers, and attended meetings of other EACs to create the ability to work together cooperatively. In 2020, we plan to host a meeting of all Lehigh Valley EACs, update our portion of the city website, finalize design of educational flyers, and continue to work with the city to bring a climate action plan and proposals that support climate action to fruition. In November, our EAC member, Kathy Fox, resigned to focus on her work with the Bethlehem Food Co-op. It's anticipated that in January, our other member, Brian Hillard, will resign due to a move outside of the city limits. Both Brian and Kathy have been invaluable members, bringing forth and working on new initiatives. The city is currently accepting applications to fill their positions. Our great appreciation goes to Robert Vidoni, City Clerk, and Judy Kelechava, Assistant City Clerk, for their assistance. We recognize and appreciate our council liaison, William Reynolds, for his assistance, attendance at our meetings, initiative, and continued efforts to implement a climate action plan. We also acknowledge and thank Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works, and Matt Dorner, Deputy Director of Public Works, for their work on the city's greenhouse gas inventory and on the selection process for an environmental consultant to write the climate action plan. We commend City Council and the administration for budgeting funds for the consultant to complete a climate action plan in 2020. The EAC is proud of Bethlehem City's commitment to climate action, and we will continue to assist in every way possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rothman. Next name send up is Martha Christine.
Hi, I'm Martha Christine, 107 Mount Airy Avenue. I'm the team leader of Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife. Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife, as you heard, is a subcommittee of the EAC. A group of six volunteers, Rosanna Mono, myself, Jane Cook, Suzanne Drake, Christy Royston, and Ilsa Stoll, were all Bethlehem residents dedicated to the greening of our city. Our mission is to work with the City of Bethlehem to support biodiversity and minimize negative environmental impacts by encouraging city residents, schools, businesses, and other organizations to implement wildlife-friendly and sustainable gardening practices. Our first project after forming in 2008 was to certify Bethlehem as a National Wildlife Federation Community Wildlife Habitat. Bethlehem registered with National Wildlife Federation in 2009 and became certified in 2012. Bethlehem Backyards for Wildlife fulfills requirements to recertify every year. These requirements include maintaining a website, which we do through a free Facebook page, conduct educational events, participate in community service, and increase National Wildlife Federation certified spaces within the city. We currently have more than 250 Bethlehem residences who are registered as National Wildlife Federation habitats. In addition, there are five schools, Calypso and Buchanan Elementary Schools, East Hills Middle School, Freedom High School, and Lehigh University. Public spaces that are certified are Sand Island Native Plant Preserve, the Meadow on the Greenway, the Arts Quest Butterfly Garden, the Miller's House Garden, and the Ilix Mill Native Garden. Parks that are certified in the city include Friendship Park, Sand Island Children's Garden, Westside Community Garden, Bethlehem Sculpture Garden, Bethlehem Public Library Garden, the Ilix Mill Nature Area and Trail, and Saucon Park. All these habitats require certain things from the National Wildlife Federation. They have to provide food, water, shelter, and a place to raise young for wildlife, and they have to implement sustainable gardening practices. Volunteers with Bethlehem Backyard for Wildlife maintain four native plant demonstration gardens within the city: the Meadow on the Greenway, Sand Island Native Plant Preserve, the Hoover Mason Trestle Gardens, and the newly formed Rose Garden Pollinator Gardens. In 2019, we clocked more than 200 volunteer hours in maintenance of these gardens, including planting, weeding, mulching, pruning, path maintenance, and litter removal. Some of our projects from 2019 include helping to host the spring native plant sale at the Unitarian Universalist Church. We assisted our city forester, Cindy Smith, with planning and implementing Arbor Day at the Rose Garden. We planted native trees at the Christopher Columbus Monument. We provided display tables and children's nature activities at fairs and festivals throughout the city, including the Monocacy Park Day, Bethlehem Food Co-op Artisan Fair, and the Moravian College Health Fair. We designed two new Rose Garden Pollinator Gardens, obtained funding, and purchased plants, organized volunteers to create the gardens at the 8th Avenue entrance to the Rose Garden. We sponsored our second Bethlehem Native Nature Photo Contest, awarding prizes which were donated from Edge of the Woods Native Plant Nursery, Jumbar's Restaurant, Jenny's Kowali Restaurant, and the Bethlehem Dairy Store. The photos were displayed in the public library in October and November. We researched and reviewed climate action plans of other National Wildlife Federation certified communities with the intention of providing input to the Bethlehem Climate Action Plan consultant with the desire to have make sure green infrastructure was addressed. Finally, we partnered with the city, and specifically with Darlene Heller and Cindy Smith, and MANA, the Mount Airy Neighborhood Association, to obtain a DCNR grant of $210,000 for improvements to the Rose Garden Park. Working with the city and volunteer organizations to implement this grant will be our major focus in 2020. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christine. Next on our list is Ronald Yoshida.
Thank you very much. Roland Yoshida, 135 East Market Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Thank you, members of the council, Mr. Mayor. You know, listening to the two people ahead of me, or three people, including Mr. Billheimer, you know, it gives me great heart that the civic culture of Bethlehem is alive and well, and that there are all the people here with good nature, good hearts, making our city that much better. And you all do the same thing. And I just wanted to thank you, first of all, for the service that you've given, the number of hours, because I have been to some of the meetings that have gone on, and, you know, taking the time out from your families in order to invest in our community. I just want to say thank you. Which brings me to something that happened almost 2 years ago, and I was rather shocked when I looked at this. On December 5th, 2017, Article 1741, the short-term lodging facilities was passed in the city by none other than a unanimous vote, 7-0. And there was one amendment made that allowed individuals to have short-term lodgers if they occupied a home. And since then, and those of us who live in the historic district, and I'm sure in other places have observed individuals who have not complied with the ordinance, and I know some of this has gone to court. Now, I've sent a note to Mr. Simonson, and he responded in this way, and I was rather surprised, and I was rather encouraged by this, but I wondered where the progress was. He responded to an email that I made on November 19th. Quote, recently the city finished a new version of Article 1741 through both the housing side and the zoning side. This has recently been introduced to council for their feedback, so I assume that you all have received this. The city's legal bureau felt that a rework of the ordinance and zoning was the best way to oversee the short-term lodging program for the future. I believe this thought process of a reworking of the ordinance was because of the recent state court decisions, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court saying that cities can regulate short-term lodgings in residential areas. That's my my addition. With that being said, I should have some updates of the approval process for the new ordinance and zoning amendment shortly. So I look forward to that, and I know many of my neighbors, and if you walk in the historic district, you'll see signs concerning compliance with Article 1741. and we're very interested, the curious want to know, as far as the progress, how many lodgings have been registered, how many have been inspected according to the ordinance. And I remember the mayor saying at one point, maybe not the mayor, but the zoning department, that they were understaffed. Perhaps we need to get more enforcement. And shame on me for not coming to the budget meetings to make that point. But I just wanted to raise this because December 5th, 2017 was when Article 1741 was passed. On another note, and this is the other item I wanted to raise with you, is the increasing density of population that we're proposing. You know, I was at the planning meeting when the armory was passed, and we're going to get more dense population here in the center city and throughout Bethlehem. And I sent a letter to the chief about a month ago, and you know, I raised some questions concerning pedestrian safety. And since I was in training to do these long-term walks, I probably walked almost every street in Bethlehem. And I will tell you, as a pedestrian, it is unsafe. And if you try to cross crosswalks, even with the sign that says, yield to pedestrians, cars do not stop. Here are some of the crosswalks that are very problematic, the ones I've experienced and nearly have been killed. Market Street and Linden. If you ever cross there by the mortuary, it doesn't seem like people stop, and I've actually had to yell at people to stop, and I've also enjoyed getting about five or six fingers in return. We won't go any further to what those four-letter words were said as well. At one point, I thought I'd have to call the chief to bring out a police officer because someone actually threatened to assault me. The crosswalk that front Liberty High School, which is a school zone, and I'm not talking about during the school time, I've crossed that zone at 9, 10, 11 o'clock, and people do not stop for pedestrians. The crosswalk at Taylor and 3rd Street on the south side next to the Charter High School. If you ever try to walk that one, good luck, and you could really get hurt there as well. And I'll also tell you the one that's on Elizabeth Avenue by Moravian, even with those blinking lights, people do not stop. And I'll tell you the worst offender of them all is the crosswalk right between New Street and Billy's. And if you ever cross there and there's a crosswalk, God help you, because about 90% of the time the drivers do not stop. So I'm just raising with you this, and you know, I really am very thankful to the police department. I've had, luckily, very few interactions with the police department. But one time I did, the police officer was very helpful and proactive with me. I bought a new car, not a new car, a two-year-old car, you know, and if you've owned one for 20 years, you don't have all the new gadgets. And I didn't know that the lights were on automatic, and I didn't have my lights on. It was 8 o'clock at night, and I made a left turn off the New Street Bridge onto 3rd Avenue, 3rd Street. And all of a sudden, the lights came on. I thought, I know I made a legal turn. The guy stopped me, the officer, and said, look, just wanted to let you know you didn't have your lights on. And I'm just letting you know, so, you know, and I said, well, thank you very much, officer. So the only thing I'm suggesting to the chief and to you all, let's get proactive on this issue. And I know that the morning call reported on Broad and 13th Street, you know, the police officer stopping people to remind them the state law says yield to pedestrians. And, you know, someone told me the other day, and I don't know if it's true or not because I haven't been able to verify it, that a pedestrian was killed on Church and Center Street in the evening. I haven't been able to verify that. But if that's the case, this is worth to save one life and also injuries that can happen to our citizens, especially as we're going to be developing the downtown area and the other areas of Bethlehem. We're going to have more density in population and hence higher probability and risk of crashes, I've been reminded, not accidents. Thank you very much, though, and I wish you Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I look forward to more conversations with you. And thank you all for making Bethlehem the civic culture and the healthy culture that it is.
Thank you, Mr. Yoshida. And on the short-term lodging, we don't have that new ordinance officially in front of us yet for consideration, but I imagine that'll come at the beginning of the year. But included in the 2020 budget was two new inspectors, full-time inspectors, that would be dedicated to rentals and also, I imagine, would be looking at short-term housing as well. Next on our list is Elizabeth Barrett.
Elizabeth Barrett, 637 Hamilton Avenue, and I'm a member of the Bethlehem Environmental Advisory Council. I want to start tonight by thanking the City Council for passing the resolution back in October, urging the state to enact legislation that would reduce single-use plastic bags. It's wonderful to live in a city where the elected officials care about the environment and growing concerns of plastic in our worlds. Plastic pollution is only getting worse, but I find it hopeful to see how many concerned Bethlehem residents there are and how many of them are making changes to address this issue. A few weeks ago, the Ocean Cleanup released a map of the most polluted rivers in the world, according to how much plastic they have. And according to this map, of the top 1,000 rivers in the world, they contribute to 80% of the plastics in our oceans. Of those 1,000 rivers, there was only one in the United States that made the list, and none in Canada, and it was the Delaware River. That is very close to home. The Monocacy River feeds into the Lehigh River, which feeds into the Delaware River. So I believe Bethlehem has a responsibility to be more careful with the amount of plastic we use in order to care for our rivers and oceans. And just this morning, USA Today had an article about plastic pollution in our oceans. And in the article, a Scottish marine animal organization reported they had found a dead whale on one of their islands with 220 pounds of plastic in its stomach. It is not just marine life that is suffering from our plastic pollution. In June, the World Wildlife Foundation, along with the University of Newcastle in Australia, reported that humans consume an average of 5 grams of microplastics each week, and this is equivalent to the size of a credit card. Drinking water, salt, beer, and shellfish were the biggest contributors of our plastic consumption. Both tap and bottled water have plastic, and hardly any home water filters can remove these plastics. I'm not a doctor and I don't know much about the human body, but eating a credit card worth of plastic does not sound healthy. But like I said, I find it hopeful to see how many concerned Bethlehem residents there are and how many of them are making changes to address this issue. There is a movement starting in Bethlehem to change our plastic habits. In just the last few weeks, myself, along with a few others, have collected 100 signatures from Bethlehem residents in support of the EAC's proposal for an ordinance to mitigate the use of single-use plastics. While the state currently does not allow Bethlehem to pass such ordinance, these 100 people would still like to see some kind of action taken by the city, by City Council, to continue to reduce plastic bags in our city. And on another note, I would like to bring a state bill to the attention of City Council. It is Bill HB 1322, and it is sponsored by Representative Wendy Ullman. Basically, it would allow citizens of Pennsylvania to have an opportunity to collect beverage containers and return at redemption centers for payments. If you've ever looked at the label of a beverage container, it may say 5 cents or 10 cents, along with the states that allow buyback programs like this. So that's what they're trying to get passed at the state level. I would ask City Council to do what they did in October and send a letter to the state in favor of this bill. I'm not quite sure exactly how it works, but I would like to see City Council also stand in favor of this bill, HB 1322. Thank you. And then I have the petition with the signatures we collected, so I don't know where that should go.
We'll accept that up here. Thank you, Ms. Barrett. The next speaker we have is Mary Jo Mizzardino.
Good evening. I am Mary Jo Mizzardino. I live at 58 East Wall Street.
I am here to support Beth Barron and the EAC's proposal to ban single-use plastic in Bethlehem. Understanding that the state legislators banning plastic until July 2020, and with no guarantee that this will not be extended when the state 2020 budget is passed, I want to encourage you, our town council, to pass an ordinance to ban single-use plastic bags effective July 1, 2020. With our town ordinance in place and effective on that date, it is my understanding it will be grandfathered in during the grace period between when the next budget is proposed and the governor signs it. Westchester, Pennsylvania, has taken the lead and has a ban of plastic bags in place to become effective July 2nd, 2020. Likewise, Philadelphia has a pending plastic ban ordinance to become effective also July 2020. One has to ask why the state would feel a need to regulate towns and cities throughout Pennsylvania to ban plastics. As reported in the morning call in the Your View column by Greg Vitale on August 14th, 2019, it was due to the actions of State Senate Majority Leader Jay Corman, whose district includes a single-use plastic bag manufacturing plant, Hylex Poly, owned by Novolex, one of the world's leading manufacturers of single-use plastic bags. Yes, reducing our use of single-use plastics will affect the plastic industry, yet not reducing our use of single-use plastics presents a much larger concern. The statistics regarding plastic bags are readily available from many reliable sources. For instance, the Center for Biological Diversity lists 10 facts about single-use plastic bags. Facts such as, in the United States alone, we use 100 billion plastic shopping bags a year, which require 12 million barrels of oil to manufacture. The average American family takes home about 1,500 plastic shopping bags a year, which according to Waste Management, only 1% are returned for recycling. The rest end up in landfills, where it is estimated it takes 450 years for a single-use bag to decompose, or it could end up as litter. Again, in a Morning Call article on November 19, 2019, about a study commissioned by the nonprofit environmental group Keep Pennsylvania Beautiful, of the estimated 500 million pieces of litter found on our roadways, 30% are plastic items. And of paramount concern, as Beth has mentioned, it ends up in our waterways where they break down or are ingested by wildlife. The more I learn about plastics and the harm they do to our environment, our wildlife, and yes, we, who are now eating plastic in our seafood and drinking microplastics in our water, the more I feel the urgency to begin reducing my use of plastics. But the problem is so much bigger. It is a consumer problem over which we have the ability to change our habits. Yet because of the scope of the problem, consumers alone cannot make the necessary changes. Banning the use of single-use plastic bags is a way to not only reduce the use of plastic, but to also begin the dialogue necessary to start educating we the people about why we must find alternatives to our plastic shopping bags. These are some of the reasons why I am urging you to take the lead and to pass an ordinance to ban single-use plastic bags effective prior to the approval of the July 2020 budget. I thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next on our list is, looks like, Stephen R. Can't quite make out your last name there.
My name is Stephen Romick. I live at 429 East Wall Street, where Raven Village is doing construction on 8 more units. And they started on the first day of Music Fest, and they're destroying our house. I just wanted to know what I could do about it.
Well, have you reached out to the city at all?
I talked to Raven Village, to the president, the vice president. They're at the house three times, and I've done nothing about it. It's been about almost 2 months.
Have you reached out to anyone in the city?
Okay. I talked to the police officers, and they told me to come here.
Okay, thank you. I would say reaching out to maybe the public works or economic development, water, fire. I don't know who wants to jump on that one. Thank you. Our Director of Community Development, Ms. Carner, is here. She said she'd step out in the hall and take your information and
thank you very
get
much.
Some more information from you. Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment on any subject not being voted on this evening? Sitting on the side of the room, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Council. Ed Gallagher, 49 West Greenwich. And I always say, fight the good fight, and that's particularly in terms of what I want to talk to you about tonight. For me, the elephant in the room right now is what I guess we might call the ethics controversy. A week ago, Councilman Callahan had a press conference right here in this room, which was really pretty distressing. That press conference was the climax of a series of activities, the gist of which was that city employees informed Councilman Callahan of some activities that perhaps represented unethical behavior. Councilman Callahan passed that information along to the mayor. After a period of time, the mayor responded. That response was not satisfactory to Councilman Callahan. And we had a situation in which an administrator in the city was actually kind of called out in this meeting for potentially unethical behavior. A moment in which I literally gasped sitting in the audience. It struck me as so out of character for this meeting. So Councilman Callahan, that moment I didn't appreciate. But to learn that you told the mayor and you didn't hear from the mayor for 2 months in reference to your asking for an investigation of a matter, that struck me as unusual and untoward also. So we have a situation in which a city administrator's reputation, if you will, is potentially damaged or wounded. We have a situation in which a councilman is kind of accusing the mayor of neglect of duty and dereliction of duty and not responding to his request. We have the mayor kind of accusing Councilman Callahan of unwarranted charges against a professional in the city. Damn ugly situation. I don't know if you will talk more about it here tonight. The mayor did say there was a possibility that he would make another statement after Councilman Callahan's press conference. So maybe we will have that. Maybe you will talk more about this under new business. But an ugly situation, and I just wonder how we got there. City employees had a problem on their mind, and they went to a councilman. Person like me in the audience in the city wonders if there isn't a system in the city itself, a kind of whistleblower system, a suggestion box, an ombudsman, something in some process or procedure or system in which a city employee who feels there's a serious wrong going on could bring it up privately without the fear of being outed or retribution. Do we have something like that? Should we have something like that? If we don't, shouldn't somebody be thinking about that? Also, in the beginning, Councilman Callahan said he wasn't quite sure what to do with that information. And maybe we've all been in a situation where people have kind of loaded something on us, and we don't quite know what to do with it. So he didn't know what to do. Is there some suggestion for a councilman or other people in a situation like that about what to do instead of kind of letting it build and fester over a period of time where it explodes into a kind of embarrassment for the city? So a guy like me kind of goes back to the beginning. Is there something we could have done at the beginning that would have cut off this situation? Could those employees have had another path to follow? Could Councilman Callahan have had another path to follow? And I guess I would just end by saying that in the 2 years before I became the gadfly and was paying attention here, I know there was discussion of an ethics ordinance, controversial in the city. I wonder if it isn't time for that to kind of come back up again and be debated and discussed again. So I'm hoping we'll hear some more tonight about this and maybe clear up some of the issues. Thank you.
Is there anyone else on the side of the room who'd like to speak? Anything not being voted on this evening? Moving into the center. Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. I'd like to follow up on both Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Yoshida. As I recall, the proposed ethics ordinance would have had an ethics commission. I forget the proper name that was in there. But an alternative would be to have a inspector general to complete the parallel between the local government and the federal government. Part-time position, hopefully, elected so that this person would be independent. Just as we elect our controller, who in that case has a staff, whether this inspector general should have a staff or not, maybe it should be just on an ad hoc basis. The controller is elected and is independent and is part-time, and that's something to think about. To follow up, Mr. Yoshida, as I would say that not only pedestrians are at risk, but some drivers are at risk from other drivers in the city. As most of you know, I grew up in Bethlehem, lived for almost 40 years in Washington, D.C., and came back about this now 16 years ago. I've noticed a change in the driving habits in Bethlehem compared to when I grew up. Drivers are a lot more aggressive than they were back in the day. It was partly because of all the traffic we had back when I was growing up, the people working at the steel. You know, and during World War II, there were 35,000 people working at the steel. But it was partly a change in attitude. It's a national problem, not just a city of Bethlehem problem. And I think it's partly, this is just my speculation, but maybe partly due to the immigration from New Jersey, because they bring their driving habits with them. I don't know. But I tell you, it's, I like to say that I've become a lot more popular when I drive, because I always have company. And this company is usually right behind me. It's not that I drive slowly. As some of you know, I did some cab driving in D.C. during foul periods, and I learned a few things. I consider myself a pretty savvy driver. I don't consider myself a slow driver by any means. But I often have company right behind me. It's usually not a problem. They just have to wait. But, for example, one time as I was coming into town on Union Boulevard, which I often do, and I was approaching a green light at 8th Avenue, And somebody behind me was so impatient that this guy, it was a young fellow, I think, got into the left turn only lane in order to pass me as we went in through the intersection. That could have been very dangerous. Nothing happened, fortunately. But it's just an example of the aggressiveness of people. On another thing is, too, I once asked Randy Miller about this. When you come into Bethlehem on Union Boulevard, you got to watch the avenues, because there are people waiting to get on Union Boulevard, and sometimes they pull out in front of you so that you have to put on the brakes. Randy said that was impeding traffic and it was an offense, but it's rarely enforced, I think. One thing I'd like to see is more speeding tickets. And I'm talking people going 15, 20 miles over the speed limit. Coming in on Union Boulevard, the speed limit is 35. I will confess that I'm rarely doing 35. I'm usually doing 40 or 45. But I got people tailgating me when I'm doing 45. And that's just too fast. And we need, if we need another officer to hand out speeding tickets, let's do it. Probably it would be so easy. I have a police officer told me once that if you want to write tickets, best thing to do is sit at Beverly and Eaton Avenues and catch people who don't stop for the stop sign. You could probably write enough tickets to pay the salary of an additional police officer. But really, let's do something about it, because if as we try to become a model city, and I think that's what many of us would like to see happen, this is one thing that needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the center would like to make a comment? Mr. Antalis?
Stephen Antalik, 77 Ridge. I recall some time back discussion whether Bethlehem should have an ethics commission or whatever, and it was voted down. And the people voted it down said there is an ethics committee at the state level which could handle the problems here in Bethlehem. The city is not the forum to handle a problem that's existing. As one of the members voting down the ethics local group suggested, the state's ethics, and that's where it should be. So I'm surprised why the complaint wasn't taken there in the first place. Why not handle it locally? It can't be handled fairly because you've got two organizations within a city arguing each with each other. Who's the judge? There is no judge. It becomes he said, she said. Also, it puts the mayor in an awkward position to have to deal with one of his employees, and it creates a subjective situation which shouldn't exist in the first place. So what should happen? Members of council and the mayor should cease and desist and stop the discussion immediately. Immediately. And turn it over to the ethics committee at the state level. Why? Because the procedures has turned into a demeaning and insulting procedure. Beneath the dignity of the citizens of Bethlehem. We don't need it. We're above it.
You have an ethics commission at the state. Take it there where it belongs. And stop this in-house quibbling. It's simple quibbling of the lowest form. Don't take us back to grade school. We're all adults. Let's act that way.
Is there anyone else in the center who'd like to make a comment? We're going to this side of the room. Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment on anything not being voted on this evening?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. President, council members, other city employees, and everyone else, I hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving. My name is George Muchlis, 1876 Viola Lane. I'm a local attorney. In addition, my family owns a small business in the downtown area and many properties with rental units within the city, which is why I'm here tonight. At a previous council meeting, there was talk about criminal problems in certain patches of downtown, particularly with regards to Main Street. Was a little disappointed to read in the press that part of the plan to tackle the problem was to have inspections for properties every 3 years for rentals. Feel that this will punish current landlords who are already abiding by the current ordinance and are keeping their property in compliance, as they will be the ones who will quote unquote be taxed again by this. As I'm sure you are aware, there are many rental units throughout the city that remain uninspected, and illegal rooming houses that also exist throughout the city as well. I hope that the companion ordinance addressing rental inspections that is being discussed currently in committee does something to address or go after those landlords who are not getting their properties inspected ever or not often at all, and to tackle the problem of illegal rooming houses, as I suspect that this is where the majority of the problem tenants reside. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to make comment on any subject not being voted on this evening? Moving to second public comment on resolution ordinances on our agenda this evening. There was no names previously signed up, so again, I'll start on this side of the room and rotate around. Does anyone wish to make comment on any ordinance or resolution to be voted on this evening? Moving on with our agenda this evening. Communications 6A.
A rezoning request from joint petitioner City Line Associates LLC and City Line Place LLC, requesting an amendment to the city zoning map by changing the zoning district to 2015 City Line Road in Bethlehem from CS Shopping Center District to PI Planned Industrial District. The applicable petitioner intends to lease the subject property to a tenant that will engage in manufacturing use.
Accept the motion in a second to schedule a public hearing for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020 at 7 p.m.
I'll make the motion.
Second. Motion by Mr. Clown, second by Mr. Reynolds. Is there any discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Colon.
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Wolf.
Aye. Passes 7-0. A public hearing has been set for Tuesday, January 21st. Communication 6B.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with CMR Construction, Inc. to provide materials and labor to install a stormwater pipe along Stanford Road. The term of the contract is 60 days. The cost is $101,527.24. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
A memorandum from Police Chief Mark DeLuzio with an attached resolution and agreement for the purchase of a duty firearm by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the Third Class City Code, retired officers may purchase their duty or firearms at fair market value.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6D.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Alloy 5 Architecture for architectural services related to the demolition of the existing Rogers Street grounds and traffic facility and design of a new structure. The term of the contract is 15 months. The cost is $49,550. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, with an attached resolution authorizing the execution of a certification agreement related to the PA State Historic Preservation Office Certified Local Government Program, which supports historic preservation activities in local communities.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. I have no reports this evening, Mr. Mayor.
Just one comment. I think I want to take the opportunity to thank Mike Alcohol and his department, especially the Electrical Bureau, that I believe did an outstanding job in the Christmas lights throughout the city, and we had a great turnout last Friday. We turned on the lights, and I think I can guarantee that there'll never be an artificial tree in Imperial Plaza. I think the lights are going to stay the way they are for a while. That's my report.
At least for the next 2 years. Moving on to ordinances for final passage, Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 107 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, titled Departments. Bill 44, 2019, is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Wolf?
Aye. Passes 7-0. The ordinances, Ordinance 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, authorizing and ratifying an amendment to an agreement for intergovernmental cooperation known as the Amendment to Intermunicipal Water Service Agreement between the Northampton Borough Municipal Authority, Bethlehem Authority, and the City of Bethlehem. Bill 56, 2019 is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions? Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller are hereby authorized to execute grant award documents for funds to be received under the 2019 Local Share Account Northampton and Lehigh Counties Grant in the amount of up to $65,295.67. The grant will be used by the Bethlehem Police Department to purchase a 3D laser scanner. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller are hereby authorized to execute grant award documents for funds to be received under the 2019 Local Share Account Northampton and Lehigh Counties Grant in the amount of up to $108,737.64. The grant will be used by the Bethlehem Police Department to purchase 10 portable scales, PC interface box, and vehicle for traffic enforcement. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with CMR Construction, Inc. to provide materials and labor to install a stormwater pipe along Stanford Road. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of a city-issued handgun assigned to Jonathan Desiderio, retired police officer. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Walter?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Alloy 5 Architecture for architectural services related to the demolition of the existing Rogers Street grounds and traffic facility and design of a new structure. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Walder.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor is hereby authorized to execute all necessary agreements between the City of Bethlehem and the Pennsylvania State Historic Preservation Office as may be required for participation in the Certified Local Government Program. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Walder.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Accept the motion in a second to consider resolution 10G through 10I as a group.
Yes. So move.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Callahan, second by Mr. Groen. Ask the clerk to call the roll on that motion.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Walder.
Aye. Any discussion? Please read the resolutions and call the roll.
Certificates of appropriateness are hereby granted for 306 Broadhead Avenue to extend the sign, reconfigure the lettering and add awnings and exterior light fixtures. 1304 Spring Street to replace the roof. 312 East 3rd Street to install a wall sign and window sign and gooseneck lighting. The resolutions are sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Negron. Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Kramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Walder.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Good luck to you. New business. The final budget meeting is scheduled to take place on Monday, December 9th at 2019 6 p.m. in Town Hall. Final reading and enactment of the 2020 budget ordinances will take place at the December 17th council meeting. There's been a little behind-the-scenes conversation between myself, Mr. Vedoni, and Mr. Spurk about the necessity of having that final budget meeting. Typically, historically, in that meeting, any proposed amendments by members of council are discussed and deliberated and voted upon. I asked Mr. Vedoni to send out a memo last week asking for any amendments to be sent to him by, I believe, Thursday?
Yes.
This Thursday, in order to prepare those and have those able to be presented. I haven't heard any rumblings or discussions about any proposed amendments, so I wanted to kind of turn to my colleagues here to see if, in fact, we wanted to have that scheduled meeting for Monday, the final budget meeting, as the only agenda item essentially would be to consider any amendments to the budget. We would also again have an opportunity to make any amendments at that last December 17th council meeting, essentially. But sometimes in the past we've had, you know, a half dozen or more potential amendments, so sometimes it's easier to flush those out at the final budget meeting than it is at a full council meeting. So I just want to kind of check the pulse and see if anybody wanted to bring something. We don't have to talk about them specifically this evening, but just had an idea if anyone thought they might want to have that meeting, in the sense that if there were no amendments, essentially we'd be coming here, opening it up, looking at each other, and then essentially adjourning. So I'm not opposed to that, because I've seen everybody here. But if we wanted to skip that process, we'd have that opportunity to do so, as there is no requirement by law that we need to have that meeting. And I don't believe it would set a bad precedent, but I wanted to hear my colleagues' thoughts on that before we did so.
I have no objection to that.
Okay. I don't believe we need to take motion on this evening, do we necessarily? Yes, Mr. Spreck, of course.
I'm just reminded that one of the other reasons to have the final budget hearing separate from the final vote would be if someone did come up with an amendment on the night of the final vote. Mr. Sivak usually sits there with a calculator, furiously changing numbers, because one amendment can affect many numbers and many line items throughout the budget. Did mention that even if this meeting did not take place in final budget, there would still be the opportunity to do amendments at that time. It would cause a lot of stress to do it at that time in terms of changing numbers.
That's specifically why the city employs Mr. Sivak, is to carry that stress and to punch those numbers to figure it all out. So I think at this point, maybe we can sit on this for a couple days and wait to that Thursday deadline. And if we don't see any amendments coming in to the clerk's office, I'll issue a memo essentially removing that final budget meeting for Monday, December 9th. And then our final consideration of the 2020 budget would take place at the December 17th. Because we've already done first reading of all those ordinances last month. And this would be the second reading to adopt the budget on December 17th. So I think that makes sense. Mr. Bedoni, did you want
to
add something?
Yeah, I would like to amend my statement about the date. I did, I believe in the memo, ask for them by the end of the day, tomorrow, if possible, because the time it takes to get things ready for the final meeting. But if there's nothing, it's not.
Okay. So if you want to sleep on that and either reach out to myself or Mr. Bedoni with any proposed amendments, we'd be happy to entertain those. So that's all I have for new business. Any other new business from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. I talked to Mr. Spurk, and I had a press conference last week, and I apologize for my voice, and I got a little bit of a cold going on here, but I had a press conference last week where it was in response to the mayor's remarks that I felt were directed to me at the last council meeting, and I would prefer not to read them and just have them entered into the minutes of the meeting as according to Robert's Rules of Orders.
So just to clarify, you have a response that you're going to give
it? Mr. Bedoni has it. I read from it directly.
Oh, so this was from last...
From the press conference.
It's not new information.
Right. I mean, if you want me to, I'll read them. I would prefer not to. I asked Mr. Spurk, and he said it's done all the time. All I have to do is ask that my remarks from the press conference, and if you go back and look at it, Mr. Bedoni has an electronic copy of it, and I read it word for word. So
that's up to you. Whatever you want to do.
I would prefer to save everybody the time. It's about 7 minutes long, so I do have some comments that I would like to make on top of that, but
sure.
Please, thank you. Anyways, prior to my press conference last week, the mayor released a statement that stated he had a problem with how I approached this matter. I'm directing this to the mayor, but really to the citizens of Bethlehem, because I want everybody to know exactly where I came from and how I was feeling at the time. In early June, it came to my attention that three employees, one ex and two current, were upset about something. And it was also reported on June 14th in Lehigh Valley Ramblings by a blogger, Bernie O'Hara. I had a discussion with two council members after a meeting down in the garage. I told them what I heard, we had a discussion about it. That was early June. I had sat on that for probably about two months and did not know what to do. And I was still hearing concerns. I was also hearing from developers and businessmen, contractors, that the permit process was extremely slow. What was supposed to be taking 2 weeks was now 2, 3, sometimes 4 months, and in one case I heard 5 months. So eventually, in late summer, I called the mayor and I told him what I'd heard, and I asked him to verbally look into it. He said at the time that he didn't have a problem with it, but he wanted everybody under oath. I said, I agree. I really didn't want anybody fabricating anything or making anything up. If they wanted to be put under oath, I had no problem with it. So, Mayor, I discussed this issue with you verbally and made you aware of the situation and what I had heard several months ago. Your comment back was, again, that you wanted everybody under oath. And after I heard that, there was no response back. Nothing. I heard nothing back for probably about two months. I want to note, at that point, it was strictly confidential and strictly between myself and the mayor, and also the two council members that I spoke to. I then asked, after no response and hearing nothing back, and usually when, Mayor, I give you credit, I mean, most of the time, if I call you up, and I, not just myself, I'm sure everybody on council, you get back to us in a timely manner on almost anything that we would come up with. This, I heard nothing about for 2 months. And it was then that I asked you to go into executive session in the summer so that the matter could be dealt with in a private manner and with full counsel and both solicitors present, and it was denied. You denied it. No, at that point, it was still confidential, and I was trying to address it so that it remained confidential in executive session. Mayor, you denied it, not me. So now we're almost three months in. I had a conversation with the council members, kept it private, late, early June. I had a conversation with you, early summer, and then I had asked to go to executive session in late summer. It was still confidential. So I tried three times to handle this what I thought was the right way and fair to everybody. Because if it was true, I think we need to look into it. If it wasn't, it could have been kept quiet and no harm to anybody. I don't want any harm to Ms. Karn if it wasn't true. And if it was true, I thought it needed to be looked into. So I had kept this quiet for over 3 months. I had a conversation with you. I kept it quiet. Heard nothing back. Asked to go to executive session. Heard nothing back. It was denied. I then sent you a letter on October 17th explaining what I had told you verbally in the summer. I explained in the letter all the facts that I know other than the names of the individuals. It is not my job to out them. It is your department and your employees. I suggested that your PA, Mr. Evans, and your solicitor, Mr. Leeson, who I totally trust, and they're your guys, not mine, just simply interview the employees in the department to find out the truth. Your reply back to me was in a letter that you clearly indicated that you were not looking into the issue. You stated to me, quote, "Your memo October 21 does not provide sufficient cause to conduct the investigation requested," unquote. You asked me to, in that letter, you asked me to produce documents, names, particulars, and indicia of corroboration. Mayor, you know that I nor anyone else on council has the authority to investigate or interview your department employees or department head. Note, at this time, this is now October, it was still confidential other than President Waldron, who was copied in the memo, Solicitor Spurk, who was copied in the memo, on council side, and on the mayor's side, Solicitor Leeson, Business Administrator Evans, and yourself on the administration side. That was it. It was still confidential. I referenced an investigation, but never brought up the topic of at a city council meeting. Only after your comments to council on November 19th that I had somehow attacked Ms. Karner from my council seat, never moved, but I guess I had a tone, by simply asking a pointed, but I thought a fair question. It was only then that this issue became public. Your comments tried to insinuate that my questioning of Ms. Karner was totally meritless, unfounded, unwarranted, and out of the blue, but you knew where I was coming from with both issues. On November 20th, you then sent me a memo asking for me now to come in for an interview. You wanted me to talk now, after all this. You wanted me to talk with Mr. Leeson and Mr. Evans only because I explained to Mr. Evans that after your comments to council on November 19th, that I shared the information that I had with the press. It was then and only then that you wanted to now to discuss the issue that I had raised and that I had tried to keep confidential for many months. I offered you three different opportunities to look into the seriousness of the issues that I made you aware of. We would not be in the situation that we are currently in had you simply looked into the allegations months ago when you were first notified. You denied any action all three times. I tried to keep it quiet. I tried to keep it between us. I tried to keep it at a point where you, I trust Mr. Evans and I trust Mr. Leeson. And I said that in my memo. I trust them wholeheartedly to do what's fair and be fair to everybody. To be fair to Ms. Connor, be fair to the residents of Bethlehem. So, I'm asking you simply to ask the employees in the question department if there's any truth to the issues that were brought to not only my attention, but were also reported by Lehigh Valley Ramblings blogger Bernie O'Hare back in June. He has a pretty good track record on things. And in his blog, he mentioned that three individuals, I don't know if they're the same three that I had heard references to, but I would assume. I'm also asking that the employees be advised of their Pennsylvania Whistleblowers Act under oath. If there's a way to swear them in, Mr. Leeson, is there a way to swear, if the mayor did do an investigation, is there a way to have people from the department sworn under oath? Because I don't want any fabrication. If they're disgruntled employees, I don't want them making anything up to harm Ms. Connor. I don't, but I want the truth. And I think all of us want the truth. Right, Mayor? Yeah. All right. And that's all I've asked for the whole time, was just, hey, look into it. And that's it. I don't want to be talking about this. I did not want to have a press conference. I told the press that I don't want to be here. But what else? I had two options after your memo back to me. It was either drop it and forget about it and never bring it up again, or I had to push it to the next level. You made that decision for me when you made those comments to council at the last meeting. I had no other option, especially with the memo that I got. I mean, I don't. What else was I going to do? Mr. Antalik's suggestion, I would hope that we could all agree on working on this just to find out what happened. If nothing happened, this is a shame that we had to go through this. But if something happened, I think it needs to be dealt with. I would prefer that I trust Mr. Evans and Mr. Leeson do an investigation, a fair one. And I told you, if they come back and say there's nothing here, I had no problem. You never heard of me again. But I was denied. So I had no choice. And after what I felt was an attack on me, I mean, you didn't mention me, but it was directed at me. What was I to do? So, in an effort to move forward on this, because I don't, this doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for the whole city of Bethlehem. And I, you know, I had someone call me up and ask me, hey, did you send someone down to the permits department? I guess someone went down there because they read in the paper. I would never do that. But I guess a resident whose permit has been taken 3-4 months, went down there and was yelling at employees. And I had a friend call me, hey, did you send? No. And I would never do that to them. But I want to get it over with. And I think had we looked, just asked the question, it could have took 5 minutes. Hey, did this happen? Yes or no? If one person's, if they all say no, it's over with. But if one of them says yes, then you got some homework to do. But what was I going to do after three denials? I don't know. So, I had told Mr. Bedoni that I accepted your invitation to come back in and talk with you guys. How it was tried to look like I was the one not cooperating is beyond me. I mean, whoever wrote that memo, yeah, kudos to him, because I had tried all along to try to keep this quiet and professional and confidential for months. So, I'm asking, please, could you have Mr. Evans and Mr. Leeson interview the people, put them under oath if you like. I would prefer them under oath because I don't want anybody that maybe doesn't like Ms. Connor fabricating anything, to be fair to her. And that's all I'm asking, so we can get over this. If not, maybe, would you be willing to go to the state ethics, as Mr. Antalik stated? I don't have a problem. I just want to get to the bottom of what happened. That's it. So, with those remarks, I'm finished with it. You'll never hear me bring it up again. And if everybody's good sitting on it, that's up to the rest of the council. But I did. I want you to notice, Mr. Reynolds, I'm not attacking you, right? You said at one meeting to me, you know, you weren't sure what was upsetting to me and what was angering me. That's what it was. And I know you didn't know about it. So you didn't know about it because no one else on council knew about it. The only people on council that knew about it was myself and Mr. Waldron. And I, at that time, I didn't even bring it up. When you said to me, I don't know what's angering you and why you have, you know, but, you know, Sonny, I think your statement was, I think sometimes I agree with the things that you say, and sometimes I disagree. But the one thing you said to me was, is your tone. I had a tone for a reason. And I felt like, hey, I tried to handle this one-on-one, right? And I tried 3 different times to keep it confidential, and I got stonewalled. And that's why I was pissed. I even asked all of us as a council, because I think in the long run, when all the information comes out, I'm going to be right on a few things, that it's all tied together. And that's why I asked all of us, I think over 4 meetings, over 2 months, for all of us to go to executive session. Why wouldn't we want to know what happened to an employee? I don't know. I mean, in a school district, if an employee is fired by an administration, the school board is known about it and told about it. We not only I asked them to go to executive session, denied it, and no one else wanted to know about it. And that's what I was getting at. I didn't say a word to anybody. No one knew about it because I was trying to keep it confidential. So I don't know at what point, where this got off track. But, you know, you'll never hear me have another tone again in here about it because I'm done with it. So to all of you, I apologize. But I felt like something's not right here. So I hope we can all move on from here. But I'm more than willing to cooperate with you in any way and come in and provide it. In my memo, I asked 3 things. Number one, that you're present with President Waldron and Solicitor Spurk, Mr. Leeson and Mr. Evans, that you interview the employees in that department, and that you give them, when they come in, a copy of the Pennsylvania Whistleblowers Act, and just inform them there's not going to be retribution against them if they speak up the truth. But if they lie and it's found out and they're trying to attack her for no reason, I want them held accountable too. I think that's the fairest thing for everybody. So I hope that we can continue to work together like we have for the prior 6 years. So I appreciate you listening. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
Thank you. And I would just like to, before I have some comments here, I do want to say that what I have here to present is not related to the situation that Mr. Callahan just talked about. This has a situation having to do with the permits in that particular situation, and you know, I have some thoughts and some comments here that have come from, you know, sitting through, and I think all of us in City Council have gotten a lot of communications, we've sat through a lot of meetings, but what I'm about to say is just because of how serious I think we do need to take accusations of such as the one that has been brought forward, and I think just as Mr. Callahan just referenced the fact that hopefully, and however that works out, there's a process by which that first situation that he referenced will come to an end. But I agree with him in the quotes of that, you know, it's good for the city, the Bethlehem, to get it over with, and it also doesn't look good for the city. And I at the city council meeting on November 6th, Councilman Callahan had made a comment to Ms. Carner, calling her unethical 3 times relating to the request for proposal process associated with the development of the Polk Street Garage. Councilman Callahan went on to state that there are people who went to jail in Allentown for this, which is obviously a very serious comment, a very serious remark. On November 25th, I believe it was, the administration sent a comprehensive memo that outlined the request for proposal process. The mayor's administration laid out the information relating to the process in a very transparent way. The memo also made it clear that absent any information that is not public, that everyone on the committee, Mr. Evans, Ms. Heller, Dr. Van Wert, and Ms. Carner, carried out their task in a professional and ethical way. Calling somebody unethical is the most serious charge that public officials can face. And, you know, we are tasked with acting in the best interests of our community, and there's an inherent trust that comes with the responsibility of being an elected official. Calling somebody unethical is not something that should be spoken of lightly. It's not brought forward without strong evidence of wrongdoing, and it's not a verbal tool to use in a disagreement. Following Mr. Callahan's very serious accusation on November 6th, you know, the public, as far as I can tell, and I've read all my emails, the public has not heard any more evidence or any explanation of where Mr. Callahan was coming from and his very confident, very strong accusation leveled at Ms. Carner. I read the articles in the paper. I did not listen. I did not watch. But I read the articles in the paper about the press conference on the different issue. And I believe, and I apologize that I don't remember which reporter asked something about Poultrede. Mr. Callahan stated, I believe, that that's not what he was looking to talk about at that time. We've had several public meetings since November 6th where he has not elaborated on this accusation. We've received no written communication elaborating on this accusation. And it's been a month. And I think that, as many people have pointed out, both through courtesy of the floor and you know, that's an unethical accusation that hangs over these meetings, this body, and the reputation of the administration. And I think when Mr. Callahan made his accusation and the administration responded with a memo, one of two things is true, is that either Mr. Callahan agrees with the information in the memo and would withdraw the accusation, or he needs to share other information that led to that very strong opinion. But I don't believe that it does this body any good, or it does the city of Bethlehem, to have those accusations sit out there without information. And as I said, the administration sent a four-page memo that went through this whole process, and I then would, with respect, Mr. Waldron, direct, or at least give Mr. Callahan the opportunity here to either add information or explain his position, or absent that, I do think that it would be paramount for him to apologize to Ms. Carner for the accusation of being unethical and the Allentown comment.
Sure. No problem. Mayor, are you aware of people from the Parking Authority and the solicitor of Parking Authority telling you that there was a phone call made to them by Ms. Carner? Are you aware of that?
No.
You're not aware of that?
Mr. Walton, I believe that he's allowed to make statements here, but
I'm just asking a question.
Okay.
Right.
He can ask the mayor, and the mayor can decide if he wants to respond or not.
Mayor, no?
I'll give you my answer.
No. It was a no? I didn't hear it.
No.
Okay. So, I think in the aftermath of Allentown and Reading, we can all agree that there's a little bit of spotlight on dealing with, and I know there was some conversation. I know it wasn't a bid process, but you appointed an ad hoc committee to look into it, and I think if you sat down and you looked at each individual item, it's probably one of the most biased reports I've ever read, if you really look at it. And I think Mr. Petrucci actually sent you, or Ms. Carner, a letter saying, like, you're really questioning my ability to get this done. And I think that memo should probably be released to council, because it was clear that category of grading was very slanted. The pricing of that RFP was $190,000 more with Chris money at stake. How much Chris, we don't know, but the other entity had no Chris money. We know that. I also know that it was not a unanimous decision on that ad hoc committee. Is that correct, Ms. Carr? Was it unanimous?
I have
No.
She doesn't intend to respond.
All right. It answers the question. But anyways, my problem, Mr. Reynolds, was this. That after the committee, the ad hoc committee was formed, they wrote up their summary and released it to the parking authority. And the parking authority read it. But the thing that's upsetting and disturbing, especially in the aftermath of Allentown and Reading, is that Ms. Carner, and I know this factual because it was told to me firsthand, called two people on the parking authority board to try to convince them, this is what I was told, to renegotiate with them. Not with both entities, that's the problem. If she called up and tried to negotiate with both, say, hey, you know, you can negotiate with both entities. No problem there. She has the right as part of that committee. Dr. Van Wert could have did the same thing. But the fact that she told both board members, and you can ask the board members, you know, if what was said, you know, that they couldn't negotiate with Nova on the price, specifically the parking issue. I just, again, it was my opinion, that's extremely unethical that phone call was made the day that they were voting on it. They already have her report from Mr. Evans and whoever else, Ms. Carner, Dr. Van Wert, they already have their recommendation. Let that board decide why the additional phone call and why telling the board that you can renegotiate with Nova on the price of these parking spots without mentioning, if it was stated, from what I was told it was not, that you can negotiate with both of them on the pricing, that's fair. But to say, hey, my preferred vendor that I want to, this entity, which was $190,000 less in a bid price, or not a bid, but an RFP price, with an additional, they were $190,000 less with no CRIS money. That CRIS money could potentially be $200,000 to $400,000 more, you know? It could be. It's an extra $400,000. I didn't vote on it. I didn't even talk at the meeting. The parking authority looked at it, and they were done with it in seconds, you know, from what I remember. So, Mr. Reynolds, in the aftermath, and I appreciate your comments. It's a sensitive subject. But in the aftermath of Allentown and Reading, for a department head, after she released her report already, to the parking authority, which was clear how she felt, and you know, and again, it didn't mention that it was not a unanimous choice on that committee. For her to make that phone call the day of the vote and suggest that that you can renegotiate with only one of the entities in price, I find that, in my opinion, unethical. I don't think the phone call should have been made. That's all.
Is there anything else you want to add?
That's it.
Okay. So I have the memo in front of us that Mr. And I thank you. I really, really appreciate your honesty here. Mr. Donches had sent this memo to City Council on November 25th, and I imagine, Mr. Donches, that this was something that had been reviewed by your other members of your staff, your legal counsel and everything else. It says, you know, that, I will not read the whole memo, but there is a paragraph that states, on August 28th, the Bethlehem Parking Authority voted on the RFP. They chose Perone Petrucci. Mr. Callahan claims Ms. Carner called members of the BPA board right before the vote in order to offer suggestions, and that was unethical. Given that it was an RFP and not a bid, Ms. Carner or any member of the committee would be absolutely within their rights to offer their opinion on the proposals to members of the board. It was not unethical. It was their role. Mr. Donches, why did you put together this ad hoc committee, if you don't mind me asking, to necessarily study these proposals?
I removed myself from the committee simply because I felt I had a conflict since my son's employed. by Attorney Perucci for the last 12 years, even though he has nothing to do with Perone development at all. And I just felt, as I have on several occasions, consulted with Solicitor Leeson, and I recused myself, and that's why the committee was formed. Mr. Evans went on. The Parking Authority wanted the city involved, so there was going to be a committee, but when I was aware, when I was made aware of Perone submitting a proposal, that's when I recused myself, and I made that very clear.
And the committee was created between Mr. Evans, Dr. Van Wert, Ms. Garner, Ms. Heller.
And then President Waldron, I felt it was important to have a member of City Council, and initially to President Waldron, and then Councilwoman Van Wert.
Because I believe, and this was shared at some point, that the Parking Authority, and this is probably more of an administrative question, is you had reached out to the Parking Authority, Mr. Livingston had expressed a desire for there to be a city role in the retail portion of this.
Correct. A city role in the whole process.
Okay. Mr. Collin, was there anything else you wanted to add to Mr. Donch's comments right there?
Not yet. If you have more, go ahead. I'll be more than happy to respond.
I would say that I think that, you know, and in the memo that we had received back on August 22nd, the administration's memo talked about how they both were good projects, that they both were good projects, and how there are different factors that enter into their recommendation. That obviously finances are one of them, and like I said, I think that they both, you know, looking at the information now, both of them are, and I hope that it's a great project, and you know, it's built, and it, you know, adds to the Polk Street development. But as I was looking through this, and I think that some of the things that Mr. Callahan just added on to his comments just a few minutes ago, when he said that the report was the most biased report he's ever read, he talked about information from one applicant, he made the argument about $190,000 more, he said it was not a unanimous choice, and I believe when you look back at these other meetings, and Mr. Callahan is the liaison from our body to the Parking Authority. He is the liaison, so he represents us, just like we have different roles, and you know, I think Mr. Othman, who's here, referenced my liaisonship to the EAC. But it was, and looking at the memo here, on August 13th, the ad hoc committee met with the two firms, and that was Dr. Van Wert, Ms. Carner, Ms. Heller, Mr. Evans, and then the two different potential projects. On August 20th, Mr. Callahan publicly referenced the August 13th ad hoc committee meetings relating to the Polk Street request for proposals. It was in the middle of criticism of several council members, including myself, and Dr. Van Wert, and Mr. Callahan bringing up an issue that Dr. Van Wert brought up in that meeting, and this is all public, by the way. Nothing I am saying here is any rumor, innuendo, not things I heard, not this person told me this person. This is all what has been said in this room with that camera on. So on August 20th, Mr. Callahan publicly referenced the August 13th ad hoc committee. In the middle of his criticism of Dr. Van Wert, he said something about how she had asked a question in this meeting about the potential for affordable housing in this project. Mr. Callahan references the conversation, the negotiations, and he talks and he says, quote, the discussion came up. The committee wanted to know if he would build units for low-income housing. I guess the response was, I can't build it for $200 a square foot and rent it for $50 a square foot. Affordable housing is more of a government duty. That is what the discussion was. His opinion was, I can't do that financially, and you can't make people do projects that they won't want to do. This was the August 20th board meeting. Then the BPA board didn't even vote on it until August 28th. So even though they had received the city's administration's recommendation, and the way these requests for proposals work is, in a lot of things, is people submit, then they pull them in, there's negotiations and things like that. So then at the recent meeting, where Mr. Callahan, on I believe it was November 6th, he accused Ms. Carner of being unethical. He expressed concern about, quote, Ms. Carner putting pressure on other entities during the RFP process. he stated, as he did again tonight, that she reached out to people of the parking authority on the day of the vote, put pressure on them to accept a lower bid. Did you or did you not call the board? Did you call multiple people to renegotiate to accept the lower bid? Then the Allentown quote was given. A couple of notes at this point. First of all, the memo answered this question about the appropriateness of anybody on that HOC committee contacting any member of the Parking Authority Board. Second, the administration also laid out the definition of the difference between a request for a proposal and a bid. And third of all, this, as I said, this does not have to do with the merits of either project. And quite frankly, I was reading through this and it seems like they both are high quality projects. So I think you could make an argument for either one. But Mr. Callahan is our parking authority liaison. The winning proposal that was picked by the parking authority board, that was not the recommended project of the administration, includes one of his family members. And as the parking authority liaison, he should not be having conversations with board members about their decision. He should not be publicly advocating for including affordable housing or not. He should not have had any conversations with anyone in the ad hoc committee on August 13th. He definitely should not be referencing those conversations publicly in order to advocate for an aspect of the project, either addition, subtraction, or affordable housing, for a vote, which was August 28th. And I don't think anybody could disagree that that behavior there is unequivocally inappropriate. Most importantly, it's all public. It all is mentioned publicly. This is also just what we know that he has said publicly. His knowledge of the details, I mean, square footage 50 versus 200, he had obviously a lot of confidence in this particular issue when he accused Ms. Carner of being unethical. He, as I said, he has not said anything about this over the past 30 days, and he is certainly free to handle himself any way he wants to. And like I said, this is not about the merits of the Polk Street project. I think when you read the memo, it is clear that the administration thought that there were positives to both. But he is our liaison to the parking authority. He is this body's representative. I cannot imagine, and if he had never said anything at any of those meetings, and he just spoke 10 minutes ago, I would think that he should not be our parking authority liaison. This project also is not over. It has not been built. It might have to go to the Planning Commission. There are details to be worked out. And so outside of everything that's been mentioned and the fact that this project needs to go on, I do not have confidence that Mr. Callahan should continue as our liaison to the Parking Authority. I feel as if this has damaged further the reputation or the connection between City Council and the Parking Authority. And I think we just need to look at his own comments from previous meetings and also the what he said today when he said, this is the most biased report I've ever read. He might feel that, but he's not the one that should be making that particular argument when a member of his family is involved in this bid, or this RFP, I should say. And I think that this project is a great project that currently is in a shadow of Mr. Callahan's, his support of the project publicly. I think it has brought in, when he first raised this issue a month ago, it has come up multiple times. And, you know, I feel going forward, and I would make a motion that City Council should remove Mr. Callahan as the liaison to the Parking Authority.
Second.
Comments?
Yeah, since there's a motion and a second, we can open it up for discussion. Mr. Callahan?
I'll step down if you feel that way, Mr. Reynolds. I mean, obviously, this is orchestrated, so and that's fine. But know this. Nobody on this council has been harder on Perone Development, or not Perone Development, but Beth Works and that and what happened with that transfer tax. I didn't, you can mention my brother all you want. My brother's in private, the private sector right now. He's doing economic development deals. Sometimes it all comes before us. Right, so I'm not the only one. I had no vote for the parking authority on that. Never had a conversation during that meeting with it. Never had any conversations about it. All I knew is that report, if you look at it, line item by line item by line item, it would be very tough for anybody, rationale, to look at that and not go, there's a slant to that. I've ripped the people that were associated with the Beth Works when that casino transfer tax went the wrong way. And nobody said a word here about it. So to try to, and to be honest with you, I didn't speak with my brother for 2 weeks about it after that. Because he was, you know, he was upset. So to suggest that I don't rip in, or I don't take a middle ground on everything is to me, pushing it. If you know what, I'll step down from the parking authority. Mm-hmm. I still will, as a liaison, I still will be involved and talk to them, because I am allowed to as a city councilman. My issue with it is that the mayor runs the parking authority. The head of the parking authority serves at his will. He can fire him and hire whoever he wants. In fact, I don't know, you know, I might be letting some out of the bag. Mr. Livingston is leaving, and he's going back for a number of reasons. But I can tell you this, he's leaving because that garage is being built because the mayor wants it built. If the mayor didn't want that garage built, it's not getting built. Because the only way it's getting built is because he wants it built. And he raised the fine increase to build it. And if you don't think so, I mean, Mr. Reynolds, you've been around a long time. You know there's no funds there. That increase in the meter rate was from the mayor. And you know how it works. If the mayor wants it built, it's being built. That parking authority is under him. That parking authority executive director serves at the will of the mayor. So with that being said, Mr. Livingston is, I think he's upset about a few things. A $5 increase took 2 years in our parking fines. I think what should happen is the mayor made a decision, and instead of throwing out the parking director out there to take all the heat, he should have stepped up and said, hey guys, this is what I want. Because that's the only way that parking garage is getting built, is because he wanted it built. Which I agree, Mayor. I think it's a great move. I think it's going to spur a lot of economic development down there. But to suggest that I'm not fair and I'm not trying to play both ways is disingenuous. Because I've ripped that company for certain things. So you can say what you want, and if I will automatically step down from the parking authority, because Mr. Reynolds, I know your games. I know your games.
Yeah, point of order, right? Please, Mr. Waldron.
So I will step down as a parking authority liaison.
Mr. Waldron? A couple comments, and there's a motion on the floor then. That it's not about criticizing, and your brother was a great mayor, and there are great projects that they are doing in the city of Bethlehem. They become not nearly as, they don't look nearly as good when you advocate for them here, privately, publicly, whatever it might be. My comments here, and I try to stay away from what is right or wrong as far as ethics laws and conflicts of interest, but I think all of us understand that our behavior is not just determined by whether or not we vote, but it's whether or not we advocate, how do we have conversations, there's a whole level. So what this is about tonight is not just, that's a conversation for somebody else that's not me. This is more about whether or not your behavior is something, and the way you've handled yourself is representative of this particular body. And it also, I'm going to state the obvious, and it doesn't matter if you disagreed with somebody that you were related to 9 times in a row. It doesn't make it any better to be able to advocate for any individual project. And I as I said before, you stated multiple times, and I guess there's some credit to be given for you to stick by the fact that you believe that this report, the recommendation there, was the most biased report you've ever seen.
but I'm hard pressed to find about how that's an appropriate comment when somebody in your family is the one that benefits from this. And this is also a conversation that nobody up here would have ever had about any of this if it hadn't been your comment about this being unethical. I'm not even asking you the difficult questions about who told you about what came up in that ad hoc committee or when you talked to board members or things like that, because I think you've answered most of those questions. And I as I said, this is more about you can feel free to handle yourself the way you want to, and that's your prerogative. But as far as representing city council to another entity, I believe the point has been made.
Mr. Reynolds, again, I want to reiterate, I had no input on that decision. I did not speak at the meeting. I had no conversations with anyone with the parking authority who was voting on. I didn't vote. I have no voting rights there. And as I've said numerous times, I prefer to handle things here in front of everybody instead of backstage. I've said that numerous times. And that's why I had the comments that I did. Okay? So I feel, and I stand by my comments, that in the wake of Allentown and Reading, for her to make that phone call on the day of the vote and try to persuade people on the board to go with Nova, which was, the bid was $190,000 less for a piece of property, I thought that was unethical. And you can disagree with it, but I feel in the wake of Allentown and Reading again, everybody's sensors were up at that point.
Not everybody's.
Well, they were, because my comments that I made were made here in public. I wasn't hiding anything. I didn't make any phone calls behind the scene early in the morning. I'm done.
Okay. I would just wrap this up then by saying that I believe that the line then for what is appropriate behavior here is clearly, by his own admission, different from Mr. Callahan than the rest of us. And I would just move the question then that the motion on the table to remove Mr. Callahan as the liaison to the parking authority.
It's not needed. I no longer want to be Mr. Waldron. You can take this as, I obviously this is something that Mr. Reynolds was working on. So I resign as the liaison to the parking authority. That does not mean that I still want to, I think parking is a very important thing in the city of Bethlehem. And as all council members, we all have opinions on parking issues. I would ask that from this point on, that Dr. Van Wert not vote or have any discussion on anything dealing with the parking authority due to a easement that you have with the parking authority for access to your garage. I mean, if we're gonna be fair,
Mr. Walden, I call the question.
The clerk will please call the roll on the motion.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Mr. Cologne?
Nay.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. That's 5-2.
Mr. President, could I make a correction of one point that Mr. Callahan made?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
The parking authority hires the executive director, not the mayor. I was not involved in any of those interviews, but Mr. Livingston was hired, number one. Number two, you could call any member of the parking authority and ask them, how many times have I ever called them and lobbied for any issue?
I know you haven't.
Correct. Yep.
Any other, Dr. Van Wert?
First of all, I'd like to say that I think it's extremely troubling that any of my property is your business. How you know that I have an easement or why it's even worth commenting. I'll talk to Mr. Spurk about voting and conflict of interest, but I think it's entirely inappropriate of you to A, have researched this or talk to anyone about it, because it is my personal property.
I've researched it.
I think it's inappropriate is what I'm saying. Second of all, I'm not done.
Go ahead.
This is a tawdry, tawdry business. And we have such better things here in Bethlehem. So the first thing I wanted to say is, Ms. Carner, I am so deeply sorry for what you've gone through. We have not always seen eye to eye and everything, but this is not how we treat our city employees who are doing a good job. And while I can't speak for the rest of council, I think I do in saying that we deeply are sorry for what you've been through here, and thank you for your service to the city. This is not how we treat our employees. The last thing I wanted to say was, that is the most beautiful Christmas tree I've ever seen. Every single time I cross the bridge, I get goosebumps. It's magical, it's worthy of our city, and you guys all did it. And thank you so much, because that's what we should be thinking about and focusing on, the joy in our city and the benefits that we on this council and you as city employees bring is to make this city better. And that's a great example of doing it right. So thank you so much. That's all I have to say.
Just one quick comment. I did research it, and only because at several meetings you not only said it's not only having a direct conflict, it's a perception of having a conflict. I think that's what you said. It was even if you're having a perception, that's one of the reasons why you voted against Ms. Ritter from being on council. To zoning, because there was a perception of a conflict, and I was back there looking at the alleyway because there's the condos that are next to your property. One of the neighbors there had a question about something, and I went back and looked at it, and I saw that there was an access point to your property. That's the only reason why I was back there, because they asked me to look into it. The parking authority sent them a memo declaring that they're going to be taking some action on the garage, and they were concerned. I went back there and looked into it, and when I looked into it and I researched it, your property has a direct easement with the parking authority, and they also own the air rights since they bought Technicolor. And I don't know how you could vote. Or even having, I don't know, you're not allowed to have any discussion if you have a conflict of interest. And you have a direct, not a perception, you have a direct conflict of interest. And how you voted on anything dealing with the parking authority is beyond me. So I'm just saying, you know, maybe you ought to have that discussion with Mr. Spurk. But you have a direct conflict, not a perception, a direct conflict. That's all. Thank you.
I wanted to add a couple things to help maybe alleviate some tensions. I had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Leeson earlier about what kind of practices and policies the city has in place in order to research any accusations against employees, whether those are managers or other employees. And there is whistleblower protections in place. It's not something that has to be done on a case-to-case basis. It's automatic, in my understanding of that. We have an HR department that investigates those issues. We, as city council, in my 6 years here, have only really been involved in one termination hearing, if you will. But with 600 employees, I imagine people get let go all the time for different issues. Or things are researched or looked into, and there's policies in place for that. There is a system, and as far as I can tell, it is working. So to bring in the state ethics board to research something, I don't think is necessary, because there are policies, there are practices in place, and additionally, we have a controller anonymous tip line in order for residents, other city employees, contractors, whoever it may be, to call call in and leave an anonymous tip to talk about waste or inefficiency or whatever the issue may be. So there's many different outlets for people, whether they want to go directly to HR or they want to remain anonymous. There are outlets there within the city that do function and do serve the purpose of some of the issues that have been brought up tonight. So I don't think we need to really talk about why the system is broken. I think we can look at the examples of it. It has been working under this administration and previous ones to the effect that if there is an issue, it does get researched and it does get solved. It may not be to everyone's satisfaction, but I think the process and policies in place are fair, and I think they do work. Mr. Callan?
One quick question. Ms. Carter, if the interviews are handled and there's nothing found, I apologize, but I heard something. I had no idea what to do with it. I tried dealing with it three times in a private manner, and the mayor is responsible for where we are, not me. I tried to handle this three times confidentially. So, Mayor, had you acted on it when I first brought it up to you, no one would have known one way or the other. So, had we went to executive session when I asked, no one would have known one way or the other. I'm done. Thank you.
Mr. President, one point. If I recall correctly, you made the request for an executive session. It was dealing with a personnel issue on a certain individual.
Right.
Not the other issue.
And as I stated earlier, I believe they're all tied together.
The way I look at it, there's three different issues that you've brought up over the past several months. They get conflated, interwoven, and interchanged at the convenience of you. And I think when that happens, it muddies the waters, and those issues can't be handled individually. So it's a bit confusing to try to follow along.
I agree, and I will say this. I tried to deal with one issue at a time. As a matter of fact, at the press conference, I specifically, when they asked me some questions about the Polk Street garage, I told him right now I want to deal with this one issue, and then I will be getting to the Polk Street issue at a later date. So, let's work on one thing at a time. And Mayor, I haven't heard anything back. You had said in your memo that if I accepted, and then I accepted it back with three conditions. Are you willing to now accept my condition?
We'll be getting a response within a day.
Thank you.
Ms. Kramchy-Smith?
Okay. I'm just going to say a few things, and it's more food for thought that I think people might not listen or hear right now, but I hope that we can open our ears and eyes to it for the future. In my high school where I work, our motto is our diversity is our strength. We have students from all over the world, and it's just wonderful to see the differences in students and co-workers on a daily basis. And I think that here on council and in our city, our diversity is our strength. We all come from different backgrounds, and we come from different frame of references, and that's okay. At the same time, we need to realize that our diversity is strong, but our similarities is a bond that keeps us together. Our similarities are such that we all love this great city, and we want what's best. And we all have the privilege and honor to have been voted to represent the city, the citizens of this great city. So that being said, I really hope that moving forward, we can value our diversity, respect each other, treat each other, everyone in this room, with professionalism and appropriateness. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kramchy-Smith. Meeting is adjourned.
That's a wrap.